At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. It is nice to be home, back in my office here, a three-week road trip in the books, UFC 320, UFC Vancouver, a little time with the family in British Columbia in between. It was a great time, but exhausting. Kind of glad to not be out there in Abu Dhabi for UFC 321. I think a five-year stretch of events over there that I'd gone to, this October fight card, comes to an end. A little sad we won't get to see Tom Aspinall's first undisputed heavyweight title defense against Ciryl Gane, and then the crowning of a new strawweight champion between Mackenzie Dern and Verna Jandiroba. But nevertheless, we are here to bring you a great show, talking a lot about UFC 321, some other MMA news. Joining me to do so will be a very familiar face here on the Bonfire, Mr. Dustin the Diamond Poirier, former interim UFC lightweight champ analyst to be. He's flourishing. He did a great job last time here at UFC 320, perfectly predicted that Alex Pereira upset inside the distance. This man knows what he is talking about. We'll see if he can do it again here today. So we're going to hit on a lot of UFC 321 topics, some other MMA news, the great Dustin Poirier. Appreciate everyone joining us. Please make sure to like, subscribe, follow, comment. It all means the world as we try to build this here show, which today is brought to you by the great folks at MyBookie. Appreciate their support once again for a pay-per-view podcast here ahead of UFC 321. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back on the other side, Dustin Poirier. We are back here on the Bonfire with one of our favorites, I think becoming an almost permanent co-host for these pay-per-views, Dustin. It's another big one coming up, UFC 321. How are you doing, man?
Doing good, brother. Doing good. Excited about another great night of fights for sure.
Yeah, you seem pretty busy. A big week for you. I think you had the new Bud Light commercial come out with Bruce Buffer. I've been seeing that everywhere. That's pretty sick. How is that?
Yeah, man. PTO, paid time at the Octagon. It's cool, man. It's fun working with Bud Light, obviously. It's fun working with Bruce. But this is cool to get back to the fans. They can actually call the number, 1-800-BUD-LIGHT, and me or Bruce will be on a recording on the other side. They enter the information, and they're going to pick a winner to go to Madison Square Garden here for, I think, 322. Coming up. So it's just fun, man. Fun company to work with.
Yeah. When did you film that?
That was actually filmed out in Vancouver. That was months ago.
Yeah. Shout out. I was just in Vancouver for 2 weeks seeing the family.
Beautiful, man, beautiful city, dude. And I've only been there one other time, maybe two other times, but it was so long ago. I fought there once. Then I think I was there for something else. But dude, I forgot how awesome it is, man. We rode around the lake and we rented bikes. It was just dope city.
Yeah, everyone had a good time out there. A perfect segue before we get into obviously UFC 321 stuff. We saw on that card, Drew Dober got another knockout. He's the first lightweight to double-digit KOs past you, no longer sole possession. But obviously a different level of competition, I think, if you stack up those knockouts between them. But pretty cool to see him get that.
Yeah, and it's incredible for him to get that. Dude, I'm a fan of his. I think him versus anybody, the guy goes in there, he's either going to win or lose big. He's going to win big or lose big. He's a fun fighter to watch. But yeah, I got some knockouts at featherweight as well that aren't on that record. But Drew's a super fun fan-friendly fighter.
Yeah, you're still holding it down higher on the all-time KO list for all of UFC competitions. So you're in a good spot.
There we go. Congrats, Dober. Congrats. Records were made to be broken.
I literally had that in my notes, that records were meant to be broken. I think you're safe at two for a while. I don't think anyone who's still active has like more than five or six. I think Gaethje's the closest with six. So you guys are pretty far up there.
Dude, crazy story. I think this was like 2008-ish, 2007. Me and Dober was supposed to fight way before the UFC, way before, because I remember the name. I knew nothing about him. He probably knew nothing about me at the time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, he said, I think, post-fight that you were, for his career, the one that got away. He would have loved to fight you, but that's how it was.
And it would have been a banger. It would have been a banger.
Yeah, for real. Also on that card, we saw Rainier de Ritter lose to Brendan Allen in the main event. Brendan Allen, I feel like he's holding it down for both of us, the Louisiana guy, and then he repped Canada on his fight trunks and that. He said like his grandparents were from there, but huge win for Brendan. I mean, on short notice, that was a very solid performance from him. What did you think of that fight?
I was happy for Brendan, man. You know, he's a Louisiana guy. He's carrying the Louisiana flag now, and I've been knowing Brendan since he was like, I don't know, 12, 13 years old. He was always on the mats, always doing jiu-jitsu tournaments, competed in jiu-jitsu regularly from a very young age. So we were on the mats together years and years and years ago. So to watch him grow up and fight locally and then make it to the UFC and now winning main events against guys who are putting themselves in line to fight for a title, right? Mm-hmm. Fluffy and him were going to be an eliminator. So now Brendan steps in, throws a monkey wrench. The whole thing's different, man. Good on Brendan for staying in fight shape, staying ready to go on such a short notice.
What did you think at the end of that fight? I mean, we don't see too many corner stoppages in between rounds in the sport. And Rainier actually just put out a statement like earlier today saying he kind of felt the four training camps in 10 months and just like it kind of caught up to him. He was maybe thinking a little too far ahead about like, you know, getting to the title shot rather than making sure his body is ready to go. But I don't know, your thoughts on corner stoppages? Like, is that, do you think that was the right call given how the fight was going and everything?
Dude, he was getting beat up, but it wasn't like he was taking that crazy, crazy, crazy amount of damage. He was getting beat up, but it wasn't horrible where I thought they needed to stop it. But obviously the guys in the corner know the fighter better than I do. I don't know the guy at all. They know like telltales of him being completely gassed. And he's not going to fight his way back into this fight. Let's save him from himself. And that's what your corner, that's what the ref's there to do is because when we're in there, you know, it's tunnel vision. We'll go until we absolutely can't, until something really bad happens. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you got to protect the fighter from himself. Only they know and he knows if that was the right call. But I would be upset if Mike Brown or Tiago or I don't care how bad I'm getting whipped, I can still win.
Yeah. Have they ever even like hinted at that in a fight? Like,
never. Never. Yeah. Never.
Yeah. I feel like you didn't have too many fights that were going that way anyways, where they would need to intercept. So
I definitely got my fair share of ass whoopings, but never was I completely gassed out to where I couldn't protect myself and they know me. They know I can pull a rabbit out of hat.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, I think that was handled properly. I know some fans don't love that, but I think we should obviously see some more of that in the sport. You know, protect your fighter when it needs to, live to fight another.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the week before that, I know last time we had you on, we were kind of looking ahead to Gamrot stepping in against Oliveira. Obviously, that didn't go his way. He, you know, took a big roll of the dice there. Have you talked to him much about how he's feeling? I know he said, like, this is going to change him and, you know, he's a different person after that loss and he's going to come back. But you had a chance to speak with him personally?
No, we haven't really talked about this fight. But if he says that, I believe him, man. He's such a hard worker. He's going to go at things differently, take this as a lesson and try to put the pieces back together. You know, I've done that my whole career, figure out what's going on, figure out what I did wrong, try to right that ship and do it again and get your hand raised. You know, he's a gamer for a reason. His nickname is like the dude wants to go, wants to learn, wants to take the most dangerous submission fighter down right off the first bell. He's crazy like that. You know, he'll get better from it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think honestly what you said when we were talking about that fight, like his striking would be kind of, you know, underestimated in that fight. He had some moments, he landed some good shots on Charles, but it just seemed like Charles was on a war path that night and was going to be really tough to beat.
He definitely did. And I would have loved to see Gamrot stand up more and avoid, you know, I didn't think Charles was going to be able to get him down. And if he did get him down, I didn't think he was going to be able to hold Gamrot down. Gamrot's such a good scrambler, but dude, he took him down and sealed the deal. And Gamrot's my guy and I know how good he is. That just doubles down on how good I know Charles is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was looking incredible. It seems like that's setting up now, probably the next BMF title fight that the UFC is going to do. Like, he called out Max Holloway post-fight. Max said he's down. Like, let's do this as soon as March or so. I thought that fight for the BMF belt would have made sense, even if Charles didn't do this fight. Like, they could have done that with him coming off the loss to Ilya if they want to. But I think this makes it even better now that everyone's got some momentum behind them.
Yeah, yeah. And, dude, I'm a huge fan of that matchup. Max versus Charles. I'm a fan of both guys, and I know it's going to be a great fight. And when you're talking about BMF guys, there aren't a whole bunch out there, but those two, well, obviously Max, but Charles is that cut from that cloth, and I'm tuning in if it happens.
Yeah, I think it would actually break the record set by you versus Max the last time of like the most UFC wins in a single fight.
Oh,
Charles is at 24, Max is at, I think, 23. So that's, you know, like two of the winningest fighters of all time. It's perfect ingredient. What does your gut say? I know long time to go, like we actually have to have it announced. We'd see how that would be. But like first thoughts, who would you lean towards in that fight?
Dude, I really like both guys, but I gotta go Max.
Yeah.
I gotta go Max.
The output and the takedown defense, or?
Yeah, the output, his willingness to stand there and throw shots. You know, and I do think Charles does get him down at some point, but Max will probably get back to his feet. If it was a make a pick right now, Max.
Yeah, that would be super interesting. And man, if he wins that, he's right there in the mix for a title shot. And Charles too. I mean, everyone was counting him out after Ilya. And you know, you win that, Gamrot and Max, how could you say you're not right there in the conversation again?
Right. And that being said, like I really thought Gamrot was going to try to test his chin for coming back so quick from such a devastating loss. I would have just loved to see that fight unfold a little bit more, but Charles was a blanket, just smothered my guy, which I thought was almost impossible to do. Yeah, I'm still in awe at that. Not that I didn't think it could happen. I just didn't think it would be that one way.
Yeah, of course. And last time we kind of spoke, we did that lightweight matchmaker and stuff. We did get a fight confirmed. We got Armin and Dan Hooker fighting in the main event of UFC Qatar. Dana White said probably a title eliminator for that. So, I mean, that takes Armin out of the title race there. So now it feels even more like it's either going to be Paddy Pimblett or Justin Gaethje fighting for that belt. And then maybe the winner of that gets the title shot after.
Yeah, for sure. But man, dude, it's crazy to me thinking about the title picture that they would give Paddy over Justin. But UFC does what they want, man.
I know. That feels like a, you know, selling it to the mainstream more so than a merit-based one. But so be it. We know how they roll sometimes. So it is what it is. Okay, two more news topics. This one I'm curious to know what you think about. They announced Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman in a boxing match for this undercard of Jake Paul versus Gervonta Davis. I mean, there were some rumors of this earlier this year. Chris told me they were like a bit unfounded at the time, but said, please, if someone comes to me with the right money, down to do this. But Anderson Silva is now 50 years old. I think Chris is like 42, 43. I don't know. What was your reaction when you saw this? Do you have interest in watching this fight?
Of course, dude. I'm a combat sports fan. I'm watching everything. It's more of like a, obviously, these two guys aren't in their prime. But it's still fun as a longtime fan. I fought on the card whenever Anderson broke his leg. You know, both legends, both champions. Hey, at least we know nobody's leg's getting broken in this one.
Yeah, exactly. No kicks allowed. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Chris can do in the boxing ring. Anderson, yeah, just don't really know what to make of him at that age. But I feel like he's still got the speed and the reflexes no matter how old he gets. So that kind of puts him in any fight.
Yeah, he's always dangerous. And this is more his arena to fight in. You know, he's a great striker. Not that Chris was a horrible striker, but Chris was a wrestler. You know, he knocked Anderson out in MMA, but this is a whole different thing here.
Yeah, facts. What do you think of this Jake Paul versus Gervonta Davis fight on the top of that? I mean, it'll be right down there by you in Miami. I don't know if you're planning on going, but I don't know. It's kind of a wild matchup, to say the least.
I don't know. It might be cool to be in the building. Dude, I just have my schedule is so crazy trying to, you know, with the kid coming and trying to schedule everything. But it's more of like a spectacle. You know, these guys are so much. And Gervonta's not a big guy. Jake is a big, big guy. Yeah. They're so differently sized. I don't even know if this can be a real fight. I know it's a exhibition, but I believe they're going to fight. It's just, the size difference is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the face-offs were ridiculous to look at, and it's like, you know, Jake Paul just keeps his arm out, and it's, I don't see how Gervonta gets inside. So it's going to be interesting to see how both these guys do, if they actually fight it out, or if it's just a money grab out the door on the way for Gervonta, because a lot of talk of he might be done after this. So quite curious, but hey, it'll be a big event on Netflix, I guess.
For sure. No, it's going to be huge. Yeah. I'll be watching, for sure.
Yeah, the night before UFC 322. So there you go. That's a huge weekend for combat sports. Okay, last one. Last time you were on here, we were previewing Merab Dvalishvili doing his third title defense. That obviously went great for him against Corey Sandhagen. He's already scheduled, again, going for history. It would be the first guy to do four title defenses inside of a calendar year. God, I guess just to start there, how difficult is it to do four or five round camps in a 12-month stretch?
Doing one is tough, man, but to stay healthy, not injured, to keep pushing your body, those weight cuts, it's a lot. It's a whole lot, man. And just the media rounds that come along, all the interviews, all the time away from training, traveling to shoot stuff and doing all these things that go into title fights, to do it that many times in a calendar year is nuts. But if somebody can do it, he's the guy, you know, bouncing off the walls, full of energy. He's the guy.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one because everyone's talking about the fighter of the year. I feel like he's already a lock. I don't know if he loses this fight if you still give it to him. Like, he's the fightingest fighter of the year, doing it at the highest level in title fights. It'd be weird to give it to him if he lost, certainly if he wins, but I don't know. Like, this is something no one's really ever done before.
Yeah, if he wins, that's his.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, that's a perfect way to springboard into the UFC 321 preview here. This episode of The Bonfire is brought to you by MyBookie. MyBookie is the place to be for all your UFC 321 betting needs, whether it is straight picks, money lines, over-under, prop bets, parlays. MyBookie has it all to enhance your UFC 321 betting experience. Use the code word BON, B-O-H-N, for a first-time player sign-up bonus. And it is going to enhance your UFC 321 betting and viewing experience. Appreciate MyBookie for their support. As always, please make sure to bet responsibly here. We could start with the bantamweight fight that's huge on this card between Umar Nurmagomedov and Mario Bautista. Both guys seem to kind of think this could be a title fight or a title eliminator for them. So maybe they get the first shot at Merab in 2026 if he continues to win here. Umar, I've always been very impressed with him, like obviously unbelievable game out of Habib's camp, but always interesting seeing these guys like coming back off a loss because it so rarely happens. We saw what Islam Makhachev did after his loss, went on his title run, it's become one of the greats. Does that compel you at all just to see how a guy like this who has such a high level mindset, used to so much success, deals with coming back after a loss?
Yeah, and dude, he's got great guys around him, world champions. I think he's going to come back no problem. You know, I think it's not going to be a problem to come back after a loss for him.
Yeah. Javier Mendez, his coach, like even is out there doing interviews being like, Umar's under extreme pressure. Like these guys, like not used to losing, everything I just said there. I don't know. How would you feel if your coach came out before one of your fights and was like, Dustin is under extreme pressure. He has to win. Like, would that add a little more to your plate?
Dude, I towards the end parts of my career, I stopped reading into stuff, and really that wouldn't mess with me. I don't know his mindset. Every fighter is different. If people around him are saying things and it's like getting into his actual alone thoughts when he's by himself, it could. But I just think the hunger to get back in the win column and represent his team is just going to be a lot of momentum for him in a good way.
Yeah, I agree. And Mario Bautista, he's on a hell of a roll here. Like, I think a 9-fight winning streak, one of the longest in bantamweight history. He's boldly out there saying he's going to finish this fight in the first round. We've obviously never seen Umar lose in that manner, only a close decision loss to Merab. Does that feel like a pretty bold prediction on his path, or could you see Mario Bautista finding a way to finish this fight, and especially early?
Yeah, of course he could. You know, 4-ounce gloves, throwing knees against wrestlers, and anything could happen, but it's easier to say that right now than when you have this guy body locking you and dumping you and moving around all over. So it could happen.
I mean, if anyone out there feels good about that, the prop bet for my bookie on Bautista by first round finish is +1890. So that's steep odds, but if you believe, that's
there's a chance.
Yeah, pretty tempting. I mean, I think Umar's one of the biggest favorites, if not the biggest favorite on this card, currently -525 to Bautista +460. Like, is that a little too steep for Bautista, who's obviously on this great winning streak right now?
Dude, MMA is so crazy. Yeah. I don't think there should ever be any huge, huge dogs. I would probably cap it at like 500. -500, like as big of a dog as you can get in MMA, because anything could happen, dude.
Yeah. Would you... It does minimize in the lower weight classes, though, right? Like, the higher you get, the more power, all that type of stuff. So that might factor a little bit into it.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, lower... Less power on the shots, you know. Much different fight talking about this than comparing what's about to happen this weekend with when you got heavyweights and a big favorite and all this. You know, one punch can change the fight any weight class, mm-hmm. but tougher in the lightweights.
Yeah, and I think it goes to show here the prop bet for it going the distance is -230. So they're clearly believing this is going to the scorecards. But yeah, a pretty important fight here. Like, are you more interested in seeing a Umar rematch with Merab because it was so competitive, or do you think Mario Bautista can bring some challenges to Merab as a guy who hasn't fought him? Does he have a game that can maybe do something that Merab hasn't seen yet?
Well, if he gets past this fight mm-hmm. and stops takedowns and scrambles back to his feet and pressures him, then I would say that, you know, I think this is a big test. If he gets past this, then obviously he'll be able to deal with what Merab brings. Mm-hmm.
Last thing on this one, Umar, and I want your take on this as the fighter. Umar said in the interviews this week when talking a lot about the loss to Merab that he broke his hand in the second round and that obviously changed the fight. But he was saying wrestling with a broken hand like significantly diminishes your cardio more so than if you were completely healthy and grappling in that sense. Is there any connection between those two? Can a hand injury and grappling drain your cardio more so than otherwise?
That's weird to me. I don't see how it would affect your cardio. For sure, you're going to positionally, it's going to change everything. You know, your gable grips, your every time you're going for anything you do in wrestling, you need your hands. But if your hand's broken and it's in pain, it's not functioning properly, it can cause a lot of problems. But I don't see how it would affect your cardio.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a strange statement too. And he said when Javier Mendez was speaking as well, like that his biggest mistake in the fight with Merab was not telling the corner about that hand injury. He kind of kept it to himself, and they said they would have changed strategy, told him to do things differently. Have you experienced much of that where you've not informed your corner of like an in-fight injury that maybe they told you after the fact? If you had told us this, Dustin, we would have maybe advised you to do this or this differently.
No, and fortunately, I haven't had any big things that have happened, and I've always been pretty vocal with my corner during fight. But that's on him to call an audible. You don't need your coach. They're not controlling a remote control to a video game. Like, if shit's not going well, you know if you're winning or losing rounds, or if this is working or that's not working. You have to adjust yourself in there. You're the fighter. The coaches can see things and try to tell you openings or cadences that your opponent's doing, but you are the one in there. You know, if you're losing rounds, you got to do what you got to do to win.
Yeah. Who do you think wins this? It's Bautista by decision is +620 as well. Like, I feel like he can take two rounds of this fight and, you know, maybe squeak out a decision. That doesn't seem crazy, but I don't know. Would you betting against Nurmagomedov? It's so rare that they lose.
I'm not doing it. Yeah. I'm not the one doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Umar feels like the good bet here. And obviously over there in Abu Dhabi, he's got all the support. They did their whole training camp in Dubai. So feels like he's kind of got the home field advantage on this one. So
where's Bautista at training?
He is, I believe, in Arizona. I want to get that right. Yeah, I think he's at MMA Lab.
Okay. Yeah, so, bit of travel.
Yeah, great team, though. John Crouch, all those guys, they know what they're doing. So we shall see. It's a big test for him. Okay, that leads us into the co-main here, Dustin. Verna Janjirova versus Mackenzie Dern. Vacant strawweight title fight here. I think this is kind of the booking that made sense. I thought it was going to be for an interim belt, but I guess this is how it works now. Everyone has to vacate if they're moving up like Zhang Weili did. This is a rematch from 5 years ago. It was like right in the thick of COVID too. So I don't know how much you can put like on potential limited training camps, training partners, all the stuff that was going on that everyone in the sport had to deal with. But obviously they've both improved a lot, and this feels like it's going to be a very different fight, especially with five rounds in play.
Yeah, five rounds can change any rematch for sure. But for this one, I got to go Mackenzie Dern.
Interesting. Yeah, she's the slight favorite right now. My bookie has her at -163 to Jean Giroba's +136. I'm pretty interested to see how that goes. Like Mackenzie has been very honest about her development in MMA. Like she has focused so much on, you know, the striking and admitted that maybe her jiu-jitsu plateaued a little bit and she wasn't able to, like, her takedown defense or takedown rate is like in the teens. I think it's somewhere like 18% or something. So obviously amazing on the ground, but you got to get it there to be effective. Have you, like, what do you make of that? Just her speaking so honestly on that and maybe admitting she's let her jiu-jitsu fall off a little bit in pursuit of bringing up the other parts of her game.
I respect it. I think more fighters need to do that. Like, be honest with themselves, you know, that's what got her to the dance, submitting people, grappling, what she's done her whole life. Of course, you can fall in love with other parts of the game, but you can't forget about what got you there. And I think she's one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in the women's division, especially in that weight class. And but it's so easy, too, with what the fans want to see and the crowd. You know, they're not so much on their feet cheering and screaming at the top of their lungs whenever you're passing guard. But when you're throwing overhands and somebody's in front of you stumbling, the world's going crazy. So I can see how it is easy to fall into that. But use that to do what you're good at and get this win. Mm-hmm. You know, use that striking, use that, then get a takedown and then do your thing.
Yeah. Well, if there's any audience in the world that's going to appreciate a grappling match in jiu-jitsu, you'd think it would be Abu Dhabi, right? Like, I think Dern won the ADCC over there at one point in time. So this should be at least appreciated by this side of it. But I thought it was really interesting what Mackenzie said this week as well, that she, if Zhang Weili was still the champion and they offered this title shot to her, she said she might not have taken it because she doesn't know if she was ready for that, you know, particular matchup. Again, honesty, I appreciate it, but I don't know, that feels like a tiny bit of a red flag if you're saying, like, I wasn't ready for this fight in a title fight, but I guess I'm ready for this one.
Right. Is she that worried about her striking defense and her cardio? And because I've seen her in fights slow down a little bit and kind of put herself in harm's way trying to land the punches, you know, kind of doing things fundamentally wrong, stepping over herself, off balance, throwing punches. It's very, very dangerous against someone like the former champion.
Yeah, the thing I like about her for this fight is she's back with Jason Perillo. It's been kind of like on and off, but I love Jason Perillo, a great guy and obviously an amazing striking coach. So that makes me at least feel better about the preparation she's done and all that stuff leading into this fight.
Yeah, he's been striking coach to the best in the world and he's going to lead her the right way for sure. It's a learning game. Every fight, every training camp, we're always learning, always getting better.
Yeah. UFC has got to be rooting for Dern to win this fight. Like, Verna, all respect to her, but that's a tough sell as a UFC champion, I think.
Yeah. You know, obviously they never say who their favorites are, but I'm sure they want certain people to win.
Yeah. And rematch element, I mean, do you put any focus on that first fight? Again, long time ago. I think Verna has come a long way since then, but I don't know, like, is 5 years ago too much for any of that to really matter? Or because they're such strong grapplers, maybe, and they did grapple a fair bit in the first fight, you take that into account with having the feel of someone?
Yeah, you kind of know their intelligence of certain positions and where their jiu-jitsu's at. But 5 years is a long time, you know, and if they're the same fighter they were 5 years ago, I've said this before, they've done a disservice to themselves. You got to be growing. 5 years is a lifetime in that octagon under those lights. You have to be a different fighter.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to see Zhang Weili come back down and fight the winner of this, regardless of what happens with Valentina Shevchenko next month? Or do you think her days at 115 are over and she might be a permanent flyweight now?
It's tough to say because I've never seen her in person, but she seems like a smaller lady. So I think that's her division, honestly.
Yeah, me too. I'm very curious to see what happens in that fight in New York, which we'll talk about at a later date. But yeah, this is a new era for strawweight here. And I think we'll see what happens because Weili kind of lapped this division a bit. And yeah, this is the best they could do, but we shall see. So you feel good about Mackenzie here. Any certain method? Do you think this goes five rounds or does she get a submission?
Oh man, now you're making me call the fight. I think she wins. I don't know how. I'm kind of if it does go 25, I'm a bit of me is worried her cardio, you know, in that fifth round. I'm going to just say Mackenzie Dern.
All right. No, that's cool. So we shall see what happens there. Okay. This brings us to the main event, a heavyweight championship fight. I think this is the first like real undisputed heavyweight title defense we've got in a few years. It's been interim fights and unification fights and all this kind of weird stuff as we've gone through this weight class from
this is still a weird one. This is still a weird one.
It is. Elaborate. What's weird about it to you?
You have a guy who lost the title fight, coming back fighting a guy who was the interim champ and became the undisputed champ because John Jones. That's not weird to you?
Yeah, no, it is weird. I just want your thoughts, especially gone. Like we could all be honest, that fight with Volkov was a terrible decision. He should not have won that. Every person in media who submitted a scorecard had it for Volkov, and you get the title shot off that. So it's a weird in that regard as well.
Yeah, but it's still a fun matchup. Two huge guys. Honestly, man, I'm not sure. Tom Aspinall is good, but everybody is so high on him. I haven't seen – what's his longest fight in the UFC? I haven't seen the guy ever in the third round. I've never seen the guy have to fight himself back into a fight. You know, I've never seen him on the stool bleeding. I want to see him in a real fight. He's been blowing past these guys. And he's for a reason, he's a great fighter, explosive, skilled, but I've never seen him really tested. So until I see him tested and fight himself back in a fight and win, I can't be on the same train as everybody else, like, you know, waving that flag, because people are talking like he's the next biggest thing, and he might be, but I'm not sold yet.
No, it's totally valid. His average fight time in the UFC is 2 minutes and 2 seconds. He's seen a second round one time, and that it ended in like the first minute of the second round.
6 minutes. That's 6 minutes of fight time. The longest fight time we've seen him. You know, what if this goes 18, 19, 20, 25? We've never seen it. We've never seen him hurt, stumbled, get off the stool and fight himself back into a fight. And until I see that, he's a great fighter. But I'm not sold on it just yet.
Yeah. And I mean, it's part of, I think, why he thinks John Jones didn't want to fight him, because there was like so many unknowns too. And we know John Jones is like a huge tape studier and likes to dissect every tendency and things like that. Maybe we'll get more out of it, because Ciryl Gane can say what you want. Like, obviously, his title fights haven't gone the best. His last one was questionable, but he's proven himself. He can go 5 rounds. He knows what he's doing, how to manage his way through a fight. So if he makes it through that first round storm, this is going to be extremely interesting, in my opinion.
Right. If the fight goes past 6 minutes, we're seeing Tom in somewhere he's never been, under the UFC lights. I'm not sure before he got to the UFC, he might have had some decisions or some longer fights. I don't know. I don't have his record in front of me, but I want to see this at least go into the third. I want to see this guy. I want to be on the train too. I want to say, hey, this is the guy, but I need to see it.
Is that like, do you strategize that if you're Gon's corner? Like, we got to get through these minutes, drag him a little later in the fight, or with like someone who's clearly so dangerous as Tom in those first few minutes, can you not even think of like, we just need to get through these moments. Like, you need to be fighting and, you know, trying to win there as well.
I think you, of course, there's an opportunity, an opening. You try to win the fight as quick as you can. But knowing that in the back of your head, this guy's never been into the third round in his UFC career, I think you not play it safe, but fight smart, let the fight unfold, and then get it there and see how he's answering the bell after that. Yeah, I do think in the back of his head, him and his whole team are going to be thinking that.
It was very funny at Media Day on a Wednesday. Like, Ciryl kind of said that, like, I'm going to take him to the deep waters. He predicted himself to win by decision, which was interesting. And Tom kind of heard the comments about the deep waters, and he said, watch the tape. Any opponent of mine who said they're going to take me into deep waters has gotten knocked out in the first minute by me. Like, go check the record. So that was an interesting layer.
And maybe he comes through in the deep waters. Maybe he knocks him out. Maybe Tom knocks him out in the fourth round and shows everybody. You know, that's why we love this so much. It's all questions until the bell rings.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen Tom. Like, I know Sergey Pavlovich is very scary and was a terrifying knockout run there, but yeah. I don't know if we've seen him fight like a kickboxer, I guess, like Ciryl Gane. So I don't know, like how much when you're fighting a guy who's going to be more, you know, hard on his feet, like Pavlovich throwing big shots as opposed to Surreal, he uses more movement and stuff like that. That could be a trickier puzzle for Tom to find.
Yeah, and that's another thing that makes this matchup fun is we don't see that many heavyweights who can move the way Gon can. Mm-hmm. You know, laterally, he's a real heavyweight. He's not a big guy fighting at heavyweight. He's a legit heavyweight, lean, muscled up, great athlete, and knows how to kickbox. So that's another question we got to see. How does Tom perform under that with that in front of him?
Mm-hmm. And Surreal, he said at Media Day as well that he feels the least pressure of any of his three title fights, like less pressure than when he fought John Jones, less pressure than when he unified with Francis Ngannou. And that's all just because of the experiences of those. But this does feel like kind of a last chance situation for him. I don't know if he's going to get a fourth chance at this belt. Obviously, being in the shoes where there's like a little desperation, knowing, you know, these opportunities might be finite. What is kind of the mental element of that you have to bring into a fight like this?
Dude, have I ever been in the shoes? I have the shoes right here if you want to see them. I've lived in the shoes. It's a lot. It's a lot on yourself. Every time you go to sleep at night, when you wake up, when you go to the gym, you're thinking about this could be the last time I ever get a chance to make this happen. But every fight is different. Every fighter's mindset is different. Some people love that feeling. Some people crumble from that feeling, but it's a feeling for sure. That can't, it's there. It's there. He's thinking about it.
Yeah. Do you think it affects how you fight when the cage door closes? Like you can't manufacture desperation, right? Like it's either it's there or it's not. Kind of relates back to Drew Dober earlier when he was talking about when he got that knockout. He's like, hey, like I was desperate, and next time I fight, I'm gonna bring that same desperation into the first round instead of the third. And it's like, well, can you really create that? It's either something that exists or it doesn't,
right? And you have to let the fights kind of unfold. Of course, you can stomp on the gas from the opening bell, but it could have been you laying on the canvas as well. These are the best guys in the world you're fighting. Everybody's so dangerous. But when it is there, boy, it's nice to hammer it and get it done. You know, I don't know if doing that mindset against a guy like Tom, who's finishing everyone in the first 6 minutes of these fights, maybe you step on the gas when the clock hits 10 minutes. You know, I don't know. There's got to be a little bit more strategy to the drag race.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, the odds for this, my bookie has Tom Aspinall -380 and Gon +290. We talked about it earlier, like, you know, having wide odds on any fight, but let alone a heavyweight fight like this, where it's so capable of ending in a matter of seconds. Do those odds feel correct to you, or not giving Gon enough respect?
They do. They feel correct to me. They do. If I had to make a pick, it would, even though I said I'm not 100% sold on Tom Aspinall, I think he's going to win this fight.
What would be the case for Gon pulling off the upset in your mind?
Besides from a shot that Tom didn't see and him getting put away, 4 ounce gloves, heavyweights, anything could happen. Besides that, I think it going to the later rounds. We have no clue. If Aspinall's gasping for air in the fourth, fifth round, I think Gon has the skills and experience to put him away, to step on the gas, to hurt him, to take the chances, especially when he's fighting a gassed opponent. So those later minutes of this fight is going to be huge. I'm going Tom Aspinall.
Well, a couple of interesting prop bets here, Dustin. Tom Aspinall by first round stoppage of any kind, submission or knockout, is plus money, +103. So if you think he's going to continue this streak, I mean, that seems like a pretty juicy prop there to get plus money on an Aspinall first round finish. Like that's pretty tempting.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad bet at all. No. You know?
And then the other side, if you do believe Gon can drag this out into a long fight and potentially win on the scorecards, he is +1150 to win this fight by decision. So
if I was going the other way, that's, you know, picking props on a fight, which I don't.
That's the way I would go.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's interesting. So we're thinking it's Anne Still here, and then I don't know what this opens up down the line. There is a very important heavyweight fight on this card between Alexander Volkov and Jailton Almeida. Tom said at Media Day he thinks the winner of that is probably next for him. I think that's him just not wanting to answer questions about John Jones and Alex Pereira coming up every like 5 minutes. But if you're him and you win this, and you could, if there's a remote chance of you getting John Jones or Alex Pereira, you're trying hard to get those fights secured, right?
And as a fight fan, those are the, I would love to see either one of those matchups standing across from Tom. You know, those, that's super fights to me.
Mm-hmm. Is there one you'd rather see more?
Jones.
Yeah, it has to be it. Jones versus Tom at the White House. Like, it feels like it's right there, but it seems like Jones and Pereira want each other.
Right. And who knows if that even happens. So we'll all see.
Yeah. All right, Dustin. Those are great insights as always. I appreciate it. I'm curious, before I let you go, are the diamond teeth real? I wasn't sure if those are photoshopped or not.
No, they're real.
They're real. When did you get those done? There you go. Looks using all those bonuses to good use there.
Man, I got all these fight of the night bonuses. I thought, why not throw some in my teeth, man?
That's funny. Is that something you've been wanting to do for a while and like waiting till post career?
Yeah, actually, with my fight in Miami with BSD, after the fight, we were back at the Airbnb, and I was telling my team, I was like, dude, I'm going to do it. I'm really going to, you know, when I'm done fighting, I'm going to, you know, I had great teeth before, but I always wanted like that perfect, like cartoon perfect smile. And I was like, if I'm going to do it, let's put some diamonds in there.
Yeah. Well, I hope they're expensive enough to prevent you from ever wanting to return, right? You can't have these things knocked out.
Oh, man, good luck trying. Let's go.
All right, Dustin, you're the man. Hopefully we'll do this again before UFC 322. That's a very exciting one, Islam Akhachev and Jack Della Maddalena. But sounds like everything's good in your world. You have a fence to paint, right? Or what are we doing? We're pressure washing it? Or
this fence has been whipping my ass. Yeah, so I got a pressure wash, got all the mildew off of it. Now I'm staining it. I got about a quarter of it done with the first coat. I'm going to let it set for about an hour. I'm going to put a second coat and continue. This is a week-long project. I got a big fence.
Yeah. Do you need to get this done before weather turns, or do you guys get like, is it still pretty warm? Does it get cold at all, or snow?
Oh, yeah.
Or what happens there?
It's probably in the high 70s right now, but it's no rain this week. So that's why I'm trying to knock this out.
Let's go. All right. Well, we'll let you get back to that, Dustin. Appreciate you as always. I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dustin for his time. Great insights and perspectives there. As always, we love this man here on the show. And I think you might need to be a permanent or semi-permanent co-host, guest analyst for these pay-per-view episodes. Certainly, we'll try to get him back for UFC 322. Very curious to hear his thoughts on Jack Della Maddalena and Islam Makhachev and the rest of that spectacular card in New York coming up here in a few weeks. Very stoked to get to that. But of course, we have much business to get through before that comes down the line. Appreciate his time. Appreciate my bookie sponsorship. Appreciate my man Kamikaze Abi Subam for putting the show together. As always, hope you enjoyed. And until next week, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.